So earlier this week, my children returned home from their summer camp up in the Berkshires. I'm glad to have them both with us, if only for a bit, and told lots of stories of all the fun that they had at summer camp, as those who go to summer camp are wont to do. And like many summer camps, one of the highlights was the color war. Some camps called a Maccabiah at Eisner. At my camp growing up, it was called Yom Sport. But it's the time when the camp is divided up into teams, each with their own color. They compete in a wide variety of different activities, so sports and song and dance and art and spirit and more. And the results are, and everyone in camp, from all of the counselors and the campers and everybody, are divided up into one or other of these teams, except for one group. Because the results are adjudicated by a very important group of people known as the judges, who judge each segment of the competition. And ultimately, they determine who the winner is and who gets all that glory and honor of winning Maccabiah that year. So it only seemed appropriate that this week's Torah portion actually is called Shoftim, which means judges. We are in the middle of the book of Deuteronomy. Moses is busy explaining all of the rules and the commandments that the Israelites are going to need to know when they cross over the Jordan River into the land of Israel, including, as it turns out in this week's portion, the administration of the judicial system. So there are a whole bunch of commandments about what we are supposed to do, how we are supposed to set up courts of justice, and what's supposed to happen. And in studying it this week, there were three sections in particular that stood out for me. Neil, if you put the first slide up. Fantastic. Thanks so much. Deuteronomy chapter 16, 18 to 19. Does someone in a nice loud voice want to read that for us here? Fabulous. All right, a couple of good verses about what we're supposed to do. What are the key teachings from this? If you are at home, you can feel free to put answers. This is the question and answer part of the sermon. You can put your answers into the chat as well if you'd like. What are the key teachings? What do we learn from this text? Okay, impartiality, right? To be a judge, you have to judge not unfairly, but impartially. Okay, what else? What else do we take away from these verses? Don't take bribes. Why not? Of the discerning and upset the police. That's right. Bribes are going to sway justice one way or another. There's actually a great rabbinic discussion. Well, what if you take a bribe for the way you were going to judge anyway? Is that okay? No. What if you take a bribe and you nevertheless acquit the innocent and condemn the guilty? Can you take a bribe for that? No, can't do it that way either. It's a perversion of justice. All right, anything else that we learn from this? What are we supposed to do? Well, another teaching? Ah, very good. That's right. In all of the settlements, for all of your tribes, magistrates and officials, everywhere where you are, need to have some type of system of governance, some type of system of justice. And what kind of justice are we supposed to have? Due justice, D-U-E, just justice, right, is supposed to do. All right, next verse. And the next slide, Neil, if you would, please. Thank you. Someone want to read this one out loud for us? It's a little bit of Hebrew in there, but you can do it. All right. What does this verse teach us? Anybody ever heard the phrase tzedek tzedek tirdof, justice, justice you shall pursue? Yeah, we have that in a bunch of places, don't we? Right, what do we learn? What is this verse trying to teach us, coming to tell us about in terms of justice? Yeah, John. To be grateful. Ah, say more about it. Why grateful? Okay, very nice. Right, look what it says, actually. We're very fond of quoting the first half, tzedek tzedek tirdof, be just, do justice. But look at the second clause of it, right? Why do we have to be just? So that that land that God gives us, we get to thrive on. We get to thrive on. It's not enough just to do justice, but you have to have a just society in order to merit the land. There, in particular, the land of Israel, but we could apply that to us as well. Anything else strike you as interesting or want to explain a little more? You have to pursue it, right? You can't stand around and wait for justice to come to you. Oh, sometimes justice will come by me, right? What do you have to do, David? You have to go out and make it happen, right? Tirdof, rodef, is to pursue or even to run after, right? You have to be active in the pursuit of justice. Right? And a lot of our commentators want to know what the tzedek, tzedek, why the double use of that word is there. Come tomorrow morning for Minion Makers. We'll study a little bit more about that. All right, one more section. You'll like this one too. Deuteronomy 17, 11 through 13. One more volunteer to read. Erica.
If anyone acts presumptuously and disregards the prince's charge, the servant there, the eternal Lord God, or the magistrate, that person shall die. Thus he will sweep out evil from Israel. All the people will hear and be afraid and will not act presumptuously again.
We don't usually put this one on bumper stickers so much, right? But we do look at what we're learning here, right? First of all, when they say you shall not deviate to the right or the left, the rabbis were not talking the political spectrum. They were imagining the law as a straight path and don't go off the path to the right or to the left. You can interpret it however you want, but that was their intent. What's our teaching from here? What do we get from this notion here? What are some of the concepts we might derive from here? Right? Respect the magistrates, and what they say is what the rule is. Good. What else? There'll be consequences. That, right? Pretty severe in this case, right? Barry Kahn online says, trust and obey, right? That notion, right? That when a ruling, when justice comes, particularly the magistrates or the priests who are acting as agents of God, those are serious, right? If you act presumptuously and disregard the ruling, what happens to you? That's the end, right? Not, and why? So that all the people will hear and be afraid and will not act presumptuously again in order to do that. All right, so a couple of key passages from here, right? Along with others in Exodus and Leviticus, these envision a world of justice, right? Where judges judge fairly and impartially, not favoring the rich or the poor, a well-respected system, a fundamental part necessary in every place where we live in all of society. Rabbi Gunther Plaut, who was the editor of our Plaut Torah commentary, writes, "No people gave as much loving attention to the overriding importance of law equitably administered and enforced as the Jewish people." Right? That's our claim to fame there, right? Now, I have to share something with you. There's a teaching, the great biblical commentator Rashi, occasionally in his comments, would write about particular verses, and he would say it's as if this verse cried out, darshani, which means interpret me, or understand me, or apply me, or explain me. Rashi could hear the text talking to him, saying, I've got something to tell you and apply, and you've got to, darshani, you have to explain me right now, right? So I have to say, this past week, reading the verses this week, some of these verses yelled at me, darshani, explain me, apply me. I'm right here for you. So I want to share with you a few little pieces that I had in mind this week of news or practices where these verses and concepts about judges and justice might apply. You may find others as well. But for example, you may have read the news report that on Wednesday there was a woman in Texas who was arrested. According to news reports, Abigail Jo Schrey of Alvin, Texas, allegedly called a federal courthouse in Washington, D.C., and left threatening messages for U.S. District Judge Tanya Chutkin. calling her a racist term and saying, allegedly, "You are in our sights. We want to kill you. If Trump doesn't get elected in 2024, we're coming to kill you. You will be targeted personally, publicly, your family, all of it." That's the phone call that she made from Texas to this federal judge. Court documents actually reveal this is not the first time that she's been arrested for making this type of threats. Just to put a little bit of context, Judge Chutkan is overseeing the election conspiracy case against Donald Trump. So this is not exactly, from this woman in Texas, respect for the law or its administration. We also know that the news carries often the words of a certain prominent, well-known defendant who publicly questions the objectivity and the impartiality of the same judge, saying online that she is highly partisan or very biased or obviously wants me behind bars, and even vowing, "If you come after me, I'll come after you." Now, it's one thing to think that. It's another thing to actually say that out loud or publicly, because the same defendant has consistently questioned the fairness of the judicial system when it's applied to him. And doing so undermines our public faith in judges and in the system of justice that we're supposed to set up. You might notice, by the way, that the news makes a habit of including in its information about judges who appointed them. You notice that? It's always Judge Chutkan appointed by President Obama, or Judge Aileen Cannon appointed by President Trump. And look, some judges are, in fact, more liberal or more conservative, and using this shorthand gives us possibly some insight to it. But I wonder, as helpful as that may be, if it doesn't play into the possible perception of bias. Chief Justice John Roberts a few years ago said, "We do not have Obama judges or Trump judges, Bush judges or Clinton judges." Mr. Roberts said, "What we have is an extraordinary group of dedicated justices, judges doing their level best to do equal right to those appearing before them." I hope Chief Justice Roberts is right about that. Another piece from the news recently. The Federal District Court in Amarillo, Texas, has one judge. Anyone know where Amarillo, Texas is? Some of us do, right? Out in the panhandle, out in the area there, right? Not nearby, not a booming metropolis. So the federal district judge has one judge, a judge named Matthew Kaczmarek, unlike many other jurisdictions where there's more than one judge. But that means that any case filed in that particular federal district court automatically winds up in front of this particular one judge. Well, it turns out that in the last handful of years, a very large number of cases have been filed by politically conservative groups, have been filed in Amarillo, Texas, of all places, including cases about reproductive rights, about immigration, LGBTQ protections, and others. The Associated Press reported, "Interest groups of all kinds have long attempted to file lawsuits before judges that they find favorable to their point of views. But the number of conservative lawsuits filed in Amarillo has spawned accusations of judge shopping, or that right-wing plaintiffs are seeking out Kaczmarek because they know they'll get a sympathetic ear." Certainly doesn't do a whole lot to promote our notion of equal justice or judging impartially that we saw in our verses. And one other note about a situation, and I don't know what to do with this. I had the thought, and I'll share it with you, but I'll confess I'm not sure what to make of it, right? For many, many years, from the political left, we have heard complaints about a two-tiered system of justice. And there has been documented differential treatment of African Americans or other people of color, harsher punishments, you might remember, for crack cocaine sold in the inner city than powder cocaine that was sold out in the suburbs. There are plenty of examples of truly unequal treatment in the justice system. I find it ironic and not quite sure what to do with the fact that now we are hearing from people who would have vigorously dismissed those claims that now they see there's a two-tiered system of justice based on perceived favoritism or political leaning. The same complaint, but now from a different group perceiving a disadvantage. Here, I think actually the Torah is very clear. There is to be one law, one impartial system that we are supposed to have. And if we don't have that yet, then we need to work towards it. I will leave it to smarter legal minds to sort out the actual administration of justice, and to wiser Jewish scholars to diligently apply the finer points of Jewish texts to real life situations. But it seems to me that we have a ways to go still in applying the Torah's views of justice and make them actualized in our world. Rabbi Plaut in his commentary writes, "Human justice has as its goal the establishment of divine equity. It is tikkun olam, a contribution to the world's perfection. In biblical thought," writes Rabbi Plaut, "law did not exist for its own sake. It had its roots in God's will." I think we know that. I think we see that. I think we understand that Judaism has a fierce dedication to justice, to judging fairly, and to treating judges fairly. Look, this Torah portion, Shoftim, judges, and the administration of justice is not about winning or losing like a Maccabi sports tournament at camp. It is about the proper ordering of society as God would want it to be. We hope and pray that we can be a part of bringing about a world of justice and a world of peace. Kein yehi ratzon, may this be God's will. And together we say, Amen.